Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Captain?
Not here.
Captain?
Report.
Signatures detected.
Shields up.
Signatures detected.
Red alert.
Context Starfleet Command.
What's happening?
Context Starfleet Command.
Delay that order.
Context Starfleet Command.
This is the captain.
Context Starfleet Command.
Get out of my chair. Chair.
We have engaged the Klingons.
Klingons.
Welcome to the Greatest Discovery, a Star Trek Discovery podcast from the makers of The Greatest Generation. I'm your host, Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
I had a thing.
Give me that thing.
You know, I'm here in Los Angeles now, and we got invited over to the in-laws' house for a dinner party.
Ooh.
And I was talking to, like, you know, my wife's parents' friends about what I do for a living, which is always a little bit annoying.
Ben, it's why I skipped my own high school reunion. I don't like that question either.
I got in one of these conversations where somebody's like, oh yeah, I've listened to a podcast. Do you know Mike Miller or Steve, Jeff Miller, maybe? The movie podcast? You know?
Wow.
Like, just vaguely remembering having heard of a podcast one time and like couldn't give me a show name or even really remember who the host was. But then, Adam, I got a curveball, which was, so you're watching the new show, right? Star Trek Discovery? I was like, yeah, we are actually doing a special show about Star Trek Discovery, and we're watching it. And he said, I've really enjoyed it. And somebody else at the table was like, oh, I love Star Trek. I didn't realize that there was a new show. And I said, yeah, well, it's only on this streaming service that CBS is trying to push. And they're using this show to push the streaming service. And the guy that brought it up initially, the guy that couldn't remember the other podcast he had ever heard of, was like, nope, it's on television. It airs Monday nights. And I was like, oh, well, geez, I heard wrong. But what I was thinking in my head was, like, this guy has no fucking idea what he's talking about with anything he says to me. But I don't want to, like, sit here and, like, Trek-splain to him that he's wrong.
God, I am so fucking tired of the confidence of the wrong right now.
There's no upside in correcting these people, it feels like.
No.
So I had to sit there and go like, yeah, I guess maybe here in LA, it's airing on Monday nights on CBS. Yeah.
Boy, really brave programming choice by CBS to put it up against Monday Night Football.
Here's what CBS did. They said, well, let's put it on TV in some markets, like, say, Los Angeles, but other markets, like, say, New York. Let's not.
Were you just, like, the heavy clinking of silverware on plate on your side of the table, just, like, angrily stabbing at your food?
I was thinking about the fact that my father-in-law was off in another part of the house, sick in bed, and I was envying him.
Oh, boy. Well, you've been sick long enough, Ben.
Yeah, I've been sick long, I've been sick hard. Shall we get into this episode, Adam?
Yeah, let's do it, Ben. Let's talk in great detail about Star Trek Discovery, Season 1, Episode 4, TLDR.
We have engaged the Klingons.
Klingons? Klingons? Those are Klingons?
What the hell is going on this ship?
I haven't the slightest idea.
This episode has a fun open, which is that we are in some sort of crystallization electric storm nightmare, which is revealed to be the replicator making a new uniform for Michael Burnham. We're seeing it from the molecular scale.
This is one of my favorite things that Star Trek so rarely does, is like showing me how the world works, but the minutiae of it, you know? Like, where do they get these uniforms? There isn't a transport ship that brings them, obviously. There's not a rack of them. They're just going to make one in a replicator.
Did they have replicator in TOS, or is this kind of like a retcon?
I feel like this might be a retcon, man. I mean, they were rocking replicator-less as recently as Star Trek VI. I submit to you as evidence the mashed potato scene.
I also, like, I guess in TOS, like, sometimes they'll go to, like, a panel that will slide open and reveal that there's, like, a cup of soup in there for them or something, but it doesn't seem like, it seems like more like an automat than the ship is fabricating that on the molecular level.
Right. And in this way, Michael Burnham has wordlessly made her decision, the decision to join the crew and take the captain up on his offer.
She gets no rank. She has, like, an empty area on her shirt where her insignia and rank would be. So that's an interesting bit of costume detail.
You don't want to walk around with an empty area, Ben.
I got like a little manscaping razor, and I've been emptying my area regularly.
You want to do that over a thing if you can. Like, you want to put down a towel, I think. That's probably a good idea.
Save yourself some cleanup. That's what I say.
Ben, it took 4 episodes of this show to finally get past character introduction. 3 competing storylines in this episode, I feel like, and all of them are fairly interesting to me. How does the spore drive work? Is this science vessel going to turn the corner and become a warship? And does Michael Burnham have a death wish? These are all fun questions to answer, and I think we get a variety of different answers as we go.
The plant at the beginning of this episode is that Tilly walks into the shared quarters with Michael and holds up a space duffel.
Burnham, Michael, do you accept the last will and testament of Captain Philippa Georgiou?
Which is not really something Michael wants to sink her teeth into Tilly's presence. So it's like shoved under the bunk and they get to work.
Ben, if you were to tell me before Star Trek Discovery premiered that one of the main sources of joy for me in watching the show would be the amount of luggage envy that I experience, I would never have believed you. But I'm looking at this roundy pelican, and I'm like, oh, I want that as a tripod case. It's pretty nice.
Yeah, I actually have a round pelican tripod case here in my Airbnb with me right now that does not look dissimilar. It's not mine. It's on loan from a production company.
If Pelican were smart, they would get on this merch, man. Sell these special Star Trek pelicans.
Yeah, but don't you think if you're on set and some guy shows up with his Star Trek tripod case, wouldn't you kind of hate that guy?
It's the Filson problem, right? When you see someone show up with a Filson bag, you immediately cast judgment on them.
It says a lot about that person.
Yeah, it does. But that doesn't stop me from wanting one of these fucking cases. I don't have to take it out of the house, but I think I might want one. Ben, the other piece of merch that I really want for myself that I never expected to covet is a pillowcase. I want a Star Trek Discovery pillowcase, man. And you get close-ups of this, like, twice an episode now.
Yeah, Michael, I guess Michael Burnham probably doesn't get to go to the fun parts of the ship, being that she's sort of a disgraced person.
Right.
So she spends a lot of time just, like, staring at the ceiling above her cot.
To be clear, if I had to choose a pillowcase, I would want Michael's and not Tilly's, because Tilly's is covered with drool.
There's no amount of laundry detergent in the universe that's going to get that thing to seem clean to you.
No.
Submit breath scan for entry.
Michael gets called up to the bridge and bumps into Saru on the elevator on the way up. And I guess the captain never told Saru that he was adding Michael Burnham to the crew roster.
I don't think Lorca and Saru are getting along at all, man.
No.
If that's the case.
This is the first indication that in this episode that they are not really pals.
The Exo's job is basically crew roster. It's pretty messed up that he would keep that from him.
So, yeah, his fear boner is all out. And we actually get a name for it in this episode. His threat ganglia. So he like basically tells her like all of the stuff that he complimented her on in terms of being capable and smart was purely theoretical in his mind, and he is not pleased that she is still on the ship. And I guess that kind of solves for what his fear boner was about when he watched the shuttle warp away in the last episode.
Right, exactly.
They get up to the bridge, and Lorca and the assembled bridge crew are like in media res Kobayashi Maruing it, and it does not go well.
They're witnessing their ship being attacked by simulated Klingon ships, and they're not doing that great. And Lorca is pissed. Lorca's pissed the way that Gene Hackman's pissed during their drill times on the Alabama. It's not great.
There's a lot of Crimson Tide in this episode, Adam.
There's
a lot.
There's no fire to use as an excuse.
So he basically says, Saru, great, you're here. Get these idiots whipped into shape. More drilling. I'm going with Michael Burnham down to my my terrifying biology lab. And that is not a turn I was expecting this show to take this soon. Like, they set up the bio lab where the terrifying monster is being kept. And the ship was supposed to be a cabinet of secrets. And it seems like every time a secret is established, it's like very quick that our main character gets brought in on the secret.
That's fair. I mean, how many of the rest of the crew are looking at Michael with contempt and also envy at this? Like, how long have they served aboard this science vessel without getting a glimpse into the Frankenstein closet?
Yeah. Oh, man, that seems like a cool room. I love science. Can I go in there? Nope. Sorry. Totally off limits. She can go in, though.
Yeah.
And so Lorca gives Michael her task for the foreseeable future, which is they got this monster, and he is very curious about the fact that it got shot a bunch of times and got bat-left a bunch of times and shows no damage, and yet it was able to shred the hull and kill a bunch of Klingons. So it seems to be like great at inflicting damage and also great at sustaining damage without getting a scratch. And he tells her, what is a claw that can rip through a hull? What is a fart that can clear a room? I want you to find out and weaponize it.
In a very on-the-nose aliens sort of attempt here.
Right. This beastie gets the name Ripper, which was what my roommates in college called me.
Maybe half the episode is about Michael's relationship to this thing, the Ripper. She, in her intuition, is able to grok fairly quickly that this is a maxi tardigrade, a inflated tardigrade, and starts postulating right away that this thing is not a threat unless it's threatened. This thing is like a teddy bear. Why do we keep poking at it? We're just provoking a defense mechanism in it. Why don't we try being friendly and studying it? And this is something that Lorca is not down with at all.
Yeah, well, like, Commander Landry comes down and she's like, hey, like, I'm the tactical officer and you're trying to figure out how to weaponize the Ripper here. So why don't we work together? And Burnham is like, listen, like, kind of my theory here is that this is not an attack dog at all, and Landry is not interested in that theory.
Landry, like all horror film teenagers is like is too brave.
Yeah.
Braver than she needs to be, because she's like,
and if he needs us to make that thing useful in his war effort, that's what we're gonna do.
In a scene that ends fairly predictably with the death of a glass table and with the death in sickbay of Commander Landry. How about Star Trek Discovery going out and killing its crew people right away? That's fun.
Yeah, everybody is. Everybody seems killable on this show.
Yeah.
She, in the proud tradition of Tasha Yar, buys it early in the first season.
Yeah, unlike Yar, we were deprived of a nice holographic funeral
farewell
situation.
Ceremony.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't get that from her.
Does that robo lady that works on the bridge keep a little copy of that in her desk drawer? What's up with that robo lady that lives on the bridge?
Benjamin. I'll have you know that this deep into the past, you will run into my early era real dolls. Dolls that do not look or feel lifelike in any way.
They had the shape of humans, but none of the look.
You can warm your body against the heat of its processor, but there's nothing soft about these real dolls in version one.
I almost drove myself out of business because they needed so much servicing, because they weren't flexible or durable. Certain parts had to be replaced frequently, and the warranties were a little bit too generous.
Have you ever really, really liked a car? These early versions were sort of like that.
I hope we do find out about that lady, though.
Yeah.
Because there was also the character with the, like, iMac from, you know, like, the blue iMac head on the Shenzhou. Was that an earlier model of the robo-lady on the Discovery?
They're doing a ton of, like, reaction shot reveals without giving us any story about a bunch of these people. Like, there's one reaction shot dude on this bridge who looks like he should be captain. He has captain hair. Like, he has, like, a V-shaped torso and captain hair, and he wheels around twice in this episode. That guy should be in command. He's got it all.
I feel like every single one of these actors is watching the show going like, what? They cut my monologue. Like, I kind of, like, they are behaving in a way where they all seem to be presented as though we know who they are and what they do. And we don't really yet. Like, we don't know what any of the jobs on the bridge are, aside from tactical and, I guess, the, like, pilot.
It's got to be so frustrating to, like, you know, they're saving this for the end of the shoot day, right? All right, we're going to do some bridge seat wheel arounds. Let's start up here, and we'll just work our way across the bridge. Everyone gets 3 takes, and that is it. Sam, you went counterclockwise there. I told you, keeping it clockwise.
We have been waiting for someone worthy of our attention.
What? Who are you?
We've encountered them.
Those are Klingons?
RSVP Commander Landry, Ben.
She really got ripped up. That is about as nasty a gore as... I feel like even nastier than the gore that we saw last time.
I don't feel like... I feel like it was 50-50 on TNG when someone went through a table. Over half the time they die, but not 100% of the time. I'm glad they're bringing along that proud legacy of glass table smashing.
She also screams bloody murder when she's getting attacked. Like, it's such a blood-curdling scream.
Computer, lights to maximum.
Your curiosity about what happens when this ship goes from science to warship is satisfied in this episode. They get a FaceTime... a 3D FaceTime from an admiral, a very severe Bob, who tells Lorca that there's an important dilithium mine that's being attacked by Klingons. They've only got enough shielding to protect them for the next 6 hours. So Lorca's motivation in this is, like, get this spore drive going so that we can go in there and save the day. Under warp, there's no ship that's nearly close enough, including us, but our spore drive can get us anywhere we want instantly if it's working. And it's a fun smash cut to Lieutenant Stamets saying, "This is not happening, buddy."
Lorca is frequently cracking the whip on his crew. And for a guy, like, he takes every opportunity to mention to anyone who will listen that he is a warrior, he's into war, he's read The Art of War, he is ready to go to war. But they gave him command of a science ship. Like, full stop. That's what they did. That has got to aggravate him so much.
He doesn't care about the details of the science at all. Like, right. He goes in there and he's like, "Let's get there." And the guy's like, "Well, no, there's reasons that we can't." And he's like, "I don't care about those reasons. Solve them. We have 6 hours, bub."
Like, I think because he didn't go over to the Glen and see all the twisted bodies and how fucked up it was over there, he does not grasp how dangerous it is to take this course of action.
They have like a real blowout where Stamets is like, "I'm taking all my spores and I'm going home, and you can fight them with your warp engine, you jerk." And like the second big time callback to Crimson Tide in this episode that made me sure that they were doing this episode at us, Adam, was Lorca did the Captain Ramsay turn on the radio and really like kick everybody's morale in the nuts move, where he just plays the audio of people in peril in this dilithium mine.
Yeah, all that was missing was the Sarah McLachlan accompaniment music. Really pulled at some heartstrings here.
Yeah, adopt a dilithium miner today for only $1 a day, less than the price of a cup of coffee. You can save a dilithium miner from a Klingon aerial attack.
Lorca, like, is a little small-minded about this because he wants to make the jump all in one go. But, like, they've pulled off short jumps before. Why don't they do 10 short jumps? What is this problem?
Yeah, I'm not really sure. Like, is there enough time spent, setting up for the jump that doing 10 short jumps would not actually save them time or something? Like, I feel like they could have resolved that with a little bit of dialogue, and they didn't.
Right. Or it could be a consumable issue with the spores. You don't want to burn a whole capsule on a shorty if you can do the whole go at once.
And that's the other thing, is that the Glen was doing long jumps, and they got a bunch of equipment from the Glen that Stamets is not really sure what all of it is or what it does. And he's got some kind of ideas, but it's not really worked out. And that is a problem. Like, the long jump still has a bunch of unknown variables to solve.
So they hit the switch and do a jump, and it does not go well. They fly way off course, super close to a star. They have to do like a sort of an Immelmann out of the gases of this thing to get to safety. Sort of a close one here.
Yeah.
A close one that does not discourage Lorca from making the attempt again.
Or from Lieutenant Saru from showing everybody his ganglia. We should also talk about what's going on with the Klingons in this episode, because they're back, baby.
We got Voke on his ship, and he's surrounded by his now starving crew, because it's 6 months later. They haven't moved an inch, and they are in the middle of this piece of space where there's nothing for them. Like, there are no natural resources. All the ships around him have been stripped for stuff to eat. Like, what are they going to do? And the natives are getting restless.
Yeah, the lady that's kind of stepped up as his second is like, "Dude, what you got to do is go get the dilithium processor from the Shenzhou." And he's really standing on some kind of like misbegotten sense of pride about using Federation technology to patch the ship back together. It's been 6 months, dude. Like, you're adrift.
That is really
fix
dumb.
The ship.
Super dumb by him, I think. That's how you lose morale.
Yeah, I mean, that's how you prove to your crew that maybe you're not a great leader for them to be following.
Yeah.
And And she's like, she's really got his back. And like, they have a conversation at one point where he's like, so I'm kind of dumb and you're kind of smart. Why are you helping me? And she basically reveals that she kind of want, like, her game is to be the power behind the throne. Like, she wants him to be a leader because she sees leadership potential. She's like the Karl Rove to his George W. Bush.
Right. She's a power bottom.
But she's like a very interesting character, like maybe the most complicated Klingon character that we've gotten so far.
She cops to wanting power behind the scenes, and in so doing, she sort of reveals how duplicitous she could be to Voke, but he's just too dumb to pick it up.
He finally swallows his pride and they go get the dilithium processor. By the time they get back to the ship that Takuvma left to Voke in his last will and testament, it has been taken over.
Yeah, and all it took was a buffet.
You throw some gawk at these guys and they're yours.
Food does a ton for morale, man. All it took was a couple of XXL turkey legs and some octopus, and these Klingons are happy.
You ever, like, in college, show up to your own dorm room or apartment or whatever to discover that there's a party there that you weren't really notified of or invited to?
No.
So you don't identify with that at all, is what you're saying?
Yeah, I do.
What's happening? Squarespace. Got to build yourself a website if you want to stand out online. Social media websites are not cutting it anymore, and you really can't tell the story of what you do and sell your products or services or time effectively without a really great looking website. Squarespace is the way to do it. Using Squarespace Blueprint, you can choose from professionally curated layout and styling options. You make a seamless checkout option for your customers. You can accept PayPal, Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer customers the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and ClearPay. Amazing. So head to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/trek to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
It's Webby season. Hi, I'm Sequoia Holmes, host of the Black People Love Paramore podcast. And we are nominated for a Webby for the episode where I interviewed Hayley Williams. In case you're unfamiliar, Black People Love Paramore is a podcast delving into the common and uncommon interests of Black people in order to help us feel more seen. We would love your vote to help us win this Webby. Please take a second, go over to the Black People Love Paramore podcast social media accounts, and you can find them at BPLP Pod across all social media platforms. Hit the link in bio and vote for Black People Love Paramore.
Hi, I'm Travis McElroy.
And I'm Teresa McElroy.
And we're the host of Schmanners.
We don't believe that etiquette should be used to judge other people.
No, on Schmanners, we see etiquette as a way to navigate social situations with confidence.
So if that sounds like something you're into,
join us every Friday on Maximum Fun, wherever you get your podcasts.
What's all this?
I'm trying to save you.
What is this?
That Saru fucking hates Lorca, right?
I don't know if you're Lorca, why you keep Saru around as your XO if this is how you're going to treat him. Lorca's sort of acting like an admiral right now instead of a captain. And I don't think that Saru is going to be long for second in command here. I think the telegraphing in place here is that Michael is going to be field promoted to second in command fairly quickly. That's what I'm predicting anyway.
Hello.
So Michael's playing around with this bear, figures out that she can feed it and domesticate it like a pit bull, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, she feeds it spores. Ben, you're someone with a dog. You know you want to take Ripper down to the tardigrade park. Let him run around a little bit.
Yeah, let him sniff the other tardigrades and roll around in the spores. Stamets, I was pretty surprised to see agreed to this, but it's pretty clear to him pretty quickly that the tardigrade and the spores have a very close interaction, and they're even able to figure out that the tardigrade has the map of the explored galaxy in its head, and when they plug it into the computer, it can actually solve the math problems that their computer couldn't solve to make this spore drive work.
I was surprised that Stamets was so into this, because it seemed to me that like the spores had a substantial dollar value attached to them. And the idea of letting tardigrade XXL just sort of run around in them, like, seemed like it would jeopardize the mission of going and rescuing the Korvan settlement, right? And I guess we should mention, the thing that we didn't mention before is, like, this Korvan settlement's under attack by the Klingons. It's important because it is a main mining operation of dilithium for the Federation. And if this thing falls, like, I guess half of their dilithium goes away, and their chances of winning a war at half strength, W/R/T dilithium, are not good.
I mean, talk about installations with a substantial dollar value. It's the Praxis problem, right? It's what caused the Klingons to come aboard the Enterprise in undiscovered country.
Yeah, they are acutely aware of how important this stuff is. So, seeing how snug as a bug tardigrade XXL is within the spores, they're like, well, why don't we beam him in to engineering? And hopefully all of this tech that we took from the Glen will... Like, this is ridiculous, right? They have all this tech from the Glen. None of it turns on. They don't know what it does. And as soon as they put the tardigrade in the room with it, it, like, connects to him. Like, it's like a cow milker, like, with the udder suckers, like, totally plugging into the tardigrade. All is right with the world because Stamets's computer screen lights up and he's like, holy shit, we got a map to the whole universe. This tardigrade had it in his brains the whole time. Let's go. And Captain Lorca's like, yeah, that's good enough for me. That's all the information I need. I haven't been present for any of this, by the way. I'm just going to trust my science officer.
I was just eating some Thai food at my weird standing desk, but... Yeah, let's go. Let's go save the day. And like save the day they do.
Like a Tenenbaum, you want to take your coffee at your desk while standing to save time.
Yeah. They like burst into existence right over top of the colony, and they do this wait for it, and then they burst out of existence, leaving a bunch of explosives in their wake, and take out all of the Klingon bird of prey. And as the wreckage of the Klingon spaceships rain down on their on their home, the colonists run out in exultation.
We ran into this problem in a thousand different movies, like Armageddon, right? You don't want to destroy the meteor, because then you have the meteor shards raining down on you. Lorca, having demonstrated that he can shoot down Klingon birds of prey, like, decides not to shoot down the rest of them in favor of what's flashy. Lorca's super flashy.
So what's the problem?
Now, we all know the Discovery is a Federation starship, but what this scene also presupposes is maybe it's a pizza cutter? Because once that saucer starts spinning, don't come a-knockin', Ben.
The tardigrade Ripper is not doing great post-spore drive jump.
It's been kind of milked to death. It's making those sad animal noises like the Triceratops in Jurassic Park.
Yeah, Michael is really feeling for this guy. Like, brings him an extra can of spores and is pretty concerned that they have done this amazing warp at the cost of a pretty barbaric act of animal cruelty, which is very un-Starfleet.
And it still may happen, Ben, but I was positive that Michael Burnham would meld with the tardigrade.
Does she have that power?
Can she meld with the tardigrade and then put the map in her head and then get into engineering, like get into the apparatus and be the navigation system for the ship?
Could she have Vulcan neck pinched the tardigrade and prevented it from mauling Landry to death?
Spock melded with a whale. You don't have to be a humanoid to meld with a Vulcan.
The question is, can Vulcans teach you how to meld, or is it something biological, like it is with Betazoids?
I don't know. Tune in next week to find out.
My people were biologically determined for one purpose alone. To sense the coming of death.
What?
To sense the coming of death.
This doesn't make any sense.
I sense it coming now.
None of it makes any sense. Sounds like nonsense to me.
Last little bit of the episode is Michael Burnham opening the tripod case. We get a little Obi-Wan hologram after death scene with Captain Georgiou, which is pretty touching and pretty hard for Michael, because Georgiou is like, I'm sure you're captain of your own ship now. You're doing great. I'm really proud of how far you've come. Not the easiest thing to hear when she is kind of disgraced.
When you've double-crossed someone, the last thing you want to hear over and over again is how much that person loves you and feels like you're their daughter. She really rings that bell over and over again. Great to see Georgiou again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was a little surprised to get her on screen.
Yeah, and I'm really glad that she didn't have time in the midst of the Battle of the Binary Stars to get her attorney on the line and change her will at the last minute.
I don't understand how the telescope got there, though, Ben. How literally did that happen?
Yeah, that was definitely aboard the Shenzhou.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, and clearly they didn't go back to the battle site to rip stuff out of the ships, because if that was something that they did, then I'm sure the Shenzhou wouldn't have had its functional warp core in it. What is that about?
Yeah.
I mean, it's touching, but it is a fairly big hole in the story. I'm sure someone will tweet me, much like I was tweeted about, they made the Starfleet symbol as a way to get rescued on the surface. Surprised you didn't know that's why they did that. Like, yeah, I know. It doesn't make it any less dumb.
And then Vok, the torchbearer, and his, I don't know if I know the lady's name that's the power behind the throne.
Power Bottom?
Yeah, and so they've been mutinied off to Kuvma's ship, which warps off, and this is setting up a villain who's got even more of an axe to grind than he already did in the first place.
Yeah, no kidding. I was surprised and excited that we got this scene from Vok's point of view instead of the departing ship's point of view.
Yeah, it was cool. Did you like this episode, Adam?
Yeah, I think I liked it mostly because we're past the introductions, right? And we're into story. And the story up to now is fairly interesting to me. I mean, Michael Burnham's frequent death wishes are starting to get a little old. Like, I think eventually she's going to turn the corner and not be so interested in dying for her crime. But she is so brave right now, to the degree that she's just willing to die during studying the tardigrade, that, like, I know she knows her utility on the ship. Like, why is she so interested in dying in the line of duty? I don't know that yet, but I guess that's a long way to give you a short answer, which is, I did like the episode, Ben. How about you?
Yeah, I feel like this might be like the first mainline episode,
right?
In a weird way. Like, almost like the first two were the prologue, the third was the pilot, and this is episode two.
Yeah, if this were a book, that is definitely its structure.
I guess I'm getting a little concerned that they're not resolving enough per episode. Like, a better use of an episode of television is a monster of the week if you're not going to move the myth arc, which is something I love about, you know, TNG and X-Files and stuff. So I hope it doesn't devolve into too much just kind of like double crossing for the sake of burning tape.
I think this episode introduced one thing that made me concerned for you as well, Ben, which is the viability of a deus ex machina, like the functional drive system of Discovery now makes, you know, flying around the universe instantaneously, you know, an effective way of transportation. And if that thing is successful a bunch of times, that's going to be pretty weak, right?
It's going to be hard to explain why they did not keep having that technology.
Right. Speaking of things that we can't explain the existence of, why don't we check those Priority One messages?
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Adam, our first Priority One message is of a commercial nature, and it goes like this. Beard Wars is a card game where you try and collect the other player's bearded army. Built for 2 or 4 players, you use your wits along with modifier cards to buff your fighters or weaken theirs. The player to collect the most beard trophies wins. If you have a beard, know someone with a beard, or have ever seen a beard, then this game is for you. Search Beard Wars on Kickstarter. Mention my name too, Michael Murdoch, illustrator and creator. That sounds like a lot of fun. It's a beard-based card game on Kickstarter.
I feel like I could never qualify to play a beard-based card game.
Are you telling me you've never seen a beard, Adam?
Yeah, I guess I've seen a beard, but what would I know about a beard? I've never grown one. I'm incapable. I'm like Voke. I'm from No Beard House. House of No Beard. Ben, we have a second Priority One message here. It is of a personal nature. It is from Raz. It is for Plavim. And the message goes like this. New podcast. Who dis? End of message.
Amazing.
That might be the new highest cost per letter Priority One message we've ever received. Thank you, Raz.
New leader in the clubhouse, and no surprise that it would be from Raz.
Well, if you're interested in breaking that record or advertising for a beard-based game, you can go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron, where commercial messages are $200. Personal messages are $100. They're a great, great way to get the word out on whatever you're trying to get the word out on, and also support the ongoing production of our show.
Yeah, just to give a little sense of scale here, like that's, you know, thousands and thousands of people will hear your message. So if you've got a Kickstarter to promote, such as Beard Wars, the beard-based card game, what better way?
You may feel like, for a variety of reasons, that we have nowhere near the thousands of listeners that we do, but rest assured,
it's
the truth.
There are no two people for whom it is more of a surprise than us.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible!
Drunk Shimoda!
I did. I'm going to give it to Lieutenant Stamets, the chief engineer slash scientist of Starship Discovery. He is willing to take Michael Burnham's word for it that it's a great idea to point-to-point transport the tardigrade into the most important part of the ship, the place where they grow the spores that they're using for their thing, but doesn't trust her enough to not hold a phaser out at it, which is the thing that is going to make it crazy and kill everybody. I felt like that character like should have bought it 100% because she, you know, explained it to him on a scientific level that he could understand, or bought it 0% and just said no.
The phaser is a device we know not to affect the tardigrade, so whatever, Stamets.
We've seen that phaser fail many times now.
Yeah. Yeah, and to his credit, he calls it a placebo against his doubt against Michael. What it actually is a placebo against saving his own life.
Right, right. Did you have a drunk Shimoda, Adam?
Yeah, I did, in an almost equally life-threatening moment when Michael Burnham feeds the tardigrade with Tilly in the room. Like, Michael outwardly tells Tilly, I don't know whether this is a suicide mission or not. I'm going to open up this can of Alpo and hopefully the tardigrade won't do to me what it did to our now recently departed security chief. Tilly remains in the room. And so I'm giving my Shimoda to Tilly. What the fuck? Like, say, if you want to make captain, you should probably live through the episode. so I would recommend making decisions that ensure that you survive.
Fair enough, Adam.
Ben, what do we have coming up on the next episode of The Greatest Discovery?
Next episode of Star Trek Discovery is Choose Your Pain. And we saw a little promo that featured the character Mud, which is exciting to a lot of people who are big fans of the original series. Looks like Captain Lorca is going to get sent to Klingon prison and get his eyes clockwork orange clamped. So that should be fun.
I wonder who's going to have command of the Discovery in his absence. I imagine there's going to be a little bit of a tug of war between Saru and Michael Burnham.
If Lorca was the Hackman of this episode we just watched, then Saru is kind of the Denzel.
The Greatest Discovery is a MaximumFun.org podcast hosted by Adam Pranica and Benjamin R. Harrison. Produced and edited by Rob Schulte. Music by Adam Ragusea. Head to MaximumFun.org/donate to support the ongoing production of this show. Please use the hashtag GreatestGen when discussing the show on Twitter. You can find Ben on there at BenjaminAHR, and Adam is at Cut for Time. And make sure to check out the Facebook and Reddit groups to continue the conversation.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.